Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Skippy, skippy, scop, scoom, dop. Dibbity, dibbity, dop, boom, bop. Skiddly, diddly, dop. Shoo, bop. Skip, skip, scop. Hoom, bop. Look at my cute guy, shoo, bop.
Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. Wednesday, January 20th, I'm J.E. Skeets rolling this morning with the Bassmaster ripping them lips, Trey Kirby.
Heyo!
Heyo!
We got the international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friend!
Lee, last but not least, making the magic happen, it's J.D.
Hello!
There he is, and here we are, shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. Like, comment, subscribe, grow the brand, be the brand. Make sure you check out Tass's What You Need to Know mini recaps dropping Monday through Friday. He had a fun one this morning. Talked a little bit about the games from last night and then picked his presidential cabinet made up entirely of NBA players. A little spoiler, Chris Paul is going to be a busy guy in that cabinet. Oh my goodness, I think Tass gave him like 8 jobs. it's incredible. Trey's hilarious weekly NBA recap dropped yesterday. You and JD knocked this one out of the park, so go check that out as well on YouTube. We get the post those on Tuesday night, the 7 days in the NBA, and they are a lot of fun. I was howling at the end. I know you were too, Lee, with the, was that Kenny Maurer, that weird clip?
That's a real stay to the end video.
Yes.
That is so good, yeah.
It's all about retention, all about that watch time. Stick around for Kenny. That's what the people want to see.
It was very, very funny. That was my favorite one yet, so kudos to Trey and JD for incredible work on that one. Go check those out. They're a lot of fun. All right, we're going to be stepping on the beach a little bit later today. You can join us live at 3 p.m. Eastern on YouTube if you want to get a little sand between your toes and hear us answer your questions and comments. And then, oh my goodness, what a day, poor JD. Keep your eyes and your ears peeled for a Lee Ellis bonus podcast pretty late tonight, you know, super late here on a Wednesday. Our Aussie is talking to another Aussie, a basketball legend, Shane Heal.
The Hammer. Yes,
the Hammer. He played a...
The Hammer.
He played like 50-ish games in the NBA. I know he played like half a season for the Wolves in the 90s, and then he had a cup of coffee with the Spurs. But most famous, of course, for being an Australian basketball legend in the Aussie League. But he got into a fight with Barkley, right? In a pre-Olympic game in 96. Is that right?
Absolutely did, yeah. Hammer was lighting up the dream team, and Charles Barkley took a cheap shot, and Shane Heal at 5'10 wanted to fight him.
Wow.
And they nearly got into it on the court, so obviously we'll be talking about that. Hammer lives to tell the story about that one, so I can't wait to hear it.
Is he the only 5'10 man who is nicknamed the Hammer? Did this guy even have a dunk in the NBA?
No, I don't think he would have dunked in the NBA. He played half a season, I think, there with the Timberwolves and really struggled to sort of see any court time, and that's why he left. But
hey, why is he called the Hammer? Do you know?
Because he's the Hammer.
Tough as nails?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter why. It doesn't matter why. He's just the hammer.
All right. Well, can you ask him at least?
All right.
For me.
Right,
ask him for me, okay? Skeetu wants to know, why the heck are you called the hammer at 5'10 and never having dunked? You're not Armin Gilliam.
Why don't you come on the pod then?
I got one question.
I'm okay.
You might be Johnny Farnham. You can talk Johnny Farnham with him.
Oh, well, that one's okay. You want to break the ice? We can do that, sure.
With the hammer?
Oh my god, it's not even funny. I don't know why I'm laughing. All right. So yeah, that's a super super late tonight. But on today's podcast, we got something fun in store. There was only two games on last night, like I said. We're gonna touch on those briefly in a little bit. But we're starting today's pod by celebrating the NBA season 1 month in, guys. Yes, that's right. We're gonna take a quick look back, take stock of this very weird 2020-21 regular season by exploring some of the biggest surprises and disappointments a month into the season. Now, I will note here, we're not going to get to award front runners. We're going to save that for Friday. We'll do that on Friday's drop podcast, where we'll go through our MVP, a month in, and the best rookie and all that a month in. But we'll do that on Friday. Today, it's like I said, surprises and disappointments and a few other questions for you guys. So Trey, get us started. 1 month in, who's been the biggest surprise? And I think you can go team, player, wherever you want here. So who do you have?
Well, I'm going team, Skeetsy. And I just got to say, it's impressive what the Memphis Grizzlies have pulled off so far. They've gotten 5 games combined from Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Justice Winslow. Justice Winslow obviously hasn't even made his Grizzlies debut yet. Right. But their highest paid player this season is Gorgui Dieng. And this guy is balling. The Grizzlies are 7-6. They're 25th in offense. They haven't really put together great games on that end of the ball, but they are 3rd in defense. So a bad offense with a great defense feels very familiar for Memphis. They force a ton of turnovers, which helps on offense. You know, if you're a team that struggles in the half court, a good way to do it is scoring before the other team is back. But everybody competes on defense, which gives them a chance. And a lot of these games, once Ja is back to 100%, once Jaren Jackson Jr. gets on the court, once they get another piece, which maybe that is Justice Winslow, but it's definitely got to be somebody on the wing. Mm-hmm. That definitely feels like their biggest upgrade they could make. There are signs here of a very competitive team, because if they're going to be playing these close games, if they're going to have a solid defense they can rely on, then you can just turn it over to Ja Morant and let him see what he can do in the last couple of minutes of these games. Great stuff from the Grizzlies to be a top 5 defense this early in the year, missing their best defensive player, I would argue, in Jaren Jackson Jr. Yeah. He fouls a lot. That's the main concern with Jaren Jackson Jr., but he has a ceiling to really elevate them even more. He's a defensive player of the year type player to me sometime in the future. So between him and Ja, once they are back fully functional to a team that's already been impressive this far, good stuff from the Grizzlies.
Yeah, that's a great pick. I don't even think, if they had like 3 wins right now at this point with all of those injuries to their main guys, I don't think everyone would be like, oh, Grizzlies, you know, they stink and stuff like that. You would understand why. Instead, like you said, above 500 at this point, it's fantastic. I mean, they obviously have their goals on making the playoffs this year. And I know us as Ja Morant fans, you'd love to see that too. Even if they got bounced in a first round series against, let's say, the Lakers or something like that, get that experience, get those reps under your belt of the postseason. So that's a great pick, the Grizzlies. Lee, who do you have?
Well, just before the season started, I think I made fun of the Cleveland Cavaliers because I thought they were going to be boring to watch and they weren't going to be very successful. Mm. Well, now I'm in on the whole Sexland. I've even got the T-shirt.
What? You have a Sexland T-shirt? Where'd you get that?
Justin Rowan. Thanks, Cavs Amateur, for that one. The Chase Down Pod.
So you're just strolling around the house. I mean, can Sebastian read your shirt? He's like, oh, Daddy, what's that say on your shirt? Greetings from Sexland, Seb.
You know, he's actually just gotten into NBA 2K as well. It's incredible. How smart is this? The other night, he made a trade. He brought Steph Curry to the Raptors. You're going to be a GM one day, son.
I was going to say, if Masai Ujiri leaves, sounds like we're getting Sebastian in.
Exactly,
I like that move.
I was like, you know, I just thought I probably aren't going to watch hardly any games with the Cavs this year. And then they come out of the blocks at 3-0. And the backcourt between Garland and Sexton has just been incredibly fun to watch, playing great basketball, winning basketball. And then Andre Drummond as well, a guy who puts up enormous numbers but hadn't sort of played exciting basketball, was playing exciting basketball. In fact, the Cavs got out to 3-0. They're 6-7 now. They have dropped off a little bit because that backcourt has been out for several games. They're supposed to be back maybe tonight. Hopefully, we'll see. But the Cavs, believe it or not, on NBA.com stats, still have the second best defensive rating in the league.
Yeah, they're the worst offensive team in the league.
Exactly. Crazy. Exactly. So they've actually been able to sort of hold their head up here by playing defense. And at 6-7, you know, like it's just below 500, still in the playoffs hunt in the East. And I do believe if they are at full strength, I think the playoffs are more than within reach for them because they've just shown a little bit of a maturity this season. Those guys, those younger guys who started off their careers, and we're like, look, rookies, it's tough to go into a season, into a team and have an impact straight away, but they're starting to play together. So I think, and then with the inclusion of Jared Allen on the team as well, mm-hmm. I think they've got some moves to be made here. And I think this is a team that absolutely feels that it should make the playoffs. But, you know, so it's a couple of things. It's playing well, it's playing fun basketball, and it's playing good defense. I mean, if you're going to hang your hat anywhere, put it on the defensive end, because at least then you can keep games close, even if you're still figuring out how to win them. So it's been a great story in Cleveland. Very happy for the Cavs and happy for the team and the players.
Yeah, I think most people had the Cavs being one of the worst teams in the league, probably a month in at the start of the season. And for them to be 6-7, like you said, they've tailed off here a little bit. I would not bank on them making the playoffs, despite the hot start. But I'll agree with you. Wow, is the defense for real? Because that can win you games, keep you in games for sure, and they are more entertaining than any of us thought they might be.
Yeah.
Especially with that backcourt where you're buying t-shirts now from other podcasts.
Buying, excuse me,
from getting sent free t-shirts.
But let's look at a few of the teams there. Like, do you have faith in the Knicks at 7-8 to keep it up? Maybe, maybe not. Magic have really dropped off after a strong start.
Keep going.
The Hornets, up and down a little bit. The Bulls, same. The Bulls,
yes, I have more faith in the Bulls and the Raptors and the Hornets than I do the Cavs. You know,
and obviously the Wizards and the Pistons there as well. So I think they're in play there. I think it's early, but I'm optimistic and hopeful for the Cavs because I think they're just a little bit of a better team than we really give them credit for.
At the very least,
the Eastern Conference play-in tournament is going to be like a throwback to the 90s. If it ends up being the Bulls, the Cavs, the Knicks, and who knows, I don't think the Pistons are going to get back, but that would be the ultimate early 90s throwback. At the very least, I'm going to be pretending it's the Eastern Conference Finals when these four teams are all going up against each other. This is the biggest tournament in the land. In the sex land, if you will. But yeah, the Cavs, man, nobody would have guessed they were going to be good because nobody really had a lot of faith in Darius Garland and Colin Sexton. They both look like they have improved, and they haven't even played for more than half of the games for the Cleveland Cavaliers here. So impressive stuff to build a winning team out of a whole bunch of centers. Crazy.
Yeah, and then you said it there. You slipped it in there, Lee. Do they look to move Drummond? You know, do they try and, I mean, I'm sure they would like to move Kevin Love. Is it possible with the contract that he has and stuff like that? McGee is an easy one that we've talked about before. You could see a bunch of teams being interested in a somewhat cheap center who's playing really well for them, especially now that they have Jared Allen. So there's probably moves to be made with them. And yeah, they've been surprising, no doubt. So those are both good picks, Grizzlies, Cavs. I'm going to go two just very quickly here, but they remind me of the same team. The Spurs in the West are a surprise. Now, should they be? Because the Spurs are always good. Well, they weren't that good last year, if you remember. You know, they didn't make the playoffs, but they're 8-6. They got quality wins over the Lakers, the Clippers, you know, the Blazers. They beat the Grizzlies. So they've had a very tough schedule and they're still sit at 8-6. And I saw Ziller was writing about them the other day. He pointed out that this Spurs team has like three of the four true hallmarks of those awesome Spurs teams from like the 90s and the 2000s and the 2010s. And that is that they don't turn the ball over. They're number one in turnover rate. They rarely foul. You know, they're top 10 in opponent free throw rate. And they just don't give up offensive rebounds. They're number six, at least when Ziller was writing this article on them, in defensive rebound rate. Those three of those four things, you know, take care of the ball, clean up your own glass, and just don't foul the other. Don't give them easy points. And that's what this Spurs team is doing. And the bench for this Spurs team is potent. I know you're in love, and rightfully so, Lele, with your Aussie mate, Patty Mills, who just can't miss, it feels like, from three right now. He's been great. Rudy Gay's been doing Rudy Gay things off the bench. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, love him as well. Like, this is, they're just, it's a classic Spurs team where it's just like, it's the sum of the parts translate into victories. And they're a weird team because they have DeRozan and Aldridge, but then they've got all these young guys that are playing really well. You know, Keldon Johnson and Lonnie Walker and stuff like that. And their backcourt, like, they're just a strange team, but they just, here they are, getting enough victories right now, at least, to obviously get into the playoffs. So I'll go with them as my surprise in the West. And then in the East, I think they're the Spurs of the East. Tell me if I'm wrong. The Indiana Pacers. I think they're very, very similar in that regard, where, again, it's like these guys. Now, they've got Sabonis, who's like all NBA level right now. They've got Brogdon, who's all-star level right now. Those guys are playing incredibly. But they got a lot of injuries, the Pacers do, and they're 8-5. Like, no TJ Warren for most of it. No Jeremy Lamb at all. People have forgotten about that one. Oladipo, of course, was missing games. Now LeVert's missing action. Miles Turner's day-to-day. And yet the Pacers are, again, 8-5. And, you know, just getting contributions from the Holiday brothers, and Dougie McBuckets is, you know, shooting 40% from deep. They, like, I see the similarities in both of these squads. They're just like, you just don't want to play them on any given night, because you know it's not going to be an easy game. I'd say it's one you could possibly drop because they just have so much talent and they're so well coached. So I'll go Pacers and Spurs.
Yeah, rather than a Spurs comparison, I'd say more a grit and grind Grizzlies comparison. Remember those teams there for sort of 6 to 8 years just seemed to always put up wins. Didn't matter who was coaching them there.
You think for the Pacers as a grind team?
Yeah, okay. just because, again, like, you know, you change the coach over, but they just still have that same discipline and that defense. They don't have, like Sabonis is similar to sort of Marc Gasol, not a superstar, just a very, you know, consistent player at both ends of the floor. Mm-hmm. And then he's surrounded by a couple of pretty solid role players out there. So, and they made the move there, getting rid of Oladipo, which was a big move. But, yeah, I think the Pacers are just going to be kind of where they were the last couple of seasons, so first round in the playoffs, but maybe that's as far as they can actually go, because they are missing, you still feel they're just missing that one piece. And, you know, LeVert, who knows if he's going to come back at all this season, we'll find out. I'm not sure he can sort of take them over the line anyway, but they're just one of those teams that every night you get a pretty tough performance from them at both ends, and it's consistent. So, yeah.
For the most part. Hey, let me ask you, Sabonis Brogdon, who's one? Who's 1A? Who's 1B? Who's 1 and 2?
Sabonis is the number one on that team. Brogdon's the 1B.
Wow. Oh, now he's getting rid of the 1A.
Wow, that is nice.
Man, wow.
Sabonis, he is fun to watch. He's not going to go out there and give you the sort of Steph Curry, you know, between the legs, behind the back stuff. But as far as just his toughness and his ability to score, and then defensively, like, he's almost impossible to move when he's down there on the block. Contest shots, grabs rebounds, all those things that don't, you know, people aren't going to House of Highlights to check out Sabonis' film. Mm-hmm. But if you appreciate and respect good basketball, he's the sort of guy who really brings it every single night. He puts on that hard hat. The Indiana Pacers goes out there and works.
Absolutely.
He does put on a hard hat. Throw on some Carhartts. This man is taking bumps left and right. I feel like he draws more contact than maybe anybody except for Joel Embiid. Embiid's another post-centric guy who takes a ton of bumps. But it feels like it would be terrible to play against Domantas Sabonis just because he's in your body the entire time, dropping the shoulders, boxing out. He just makes it tough on other teams. That's why the team I compare the Pacers to is the Pacers. It feels like every year you think, okay, they're going to be all right. Maybe we'll see what happens. They exceed your expectations just a little. This year they got a chance at a home court advantage in the playoffs. We'll see how it plays out, but good stuff from the Pacers, because it could have been a dramatic season, it felt like, with the Victor Oladipo scenario hanging over their heads. They came out of the gate looking great, and Sabonis has been playing a ton of minutes, which is part of the reason why his stats are up, but he's able to do it right now. They obviously swung the deal for Caris LeVert. Hopefully someday he is healthy again and is able to play with them, because that raises the ceiling even more. Just another guy who can score off the dribble. We'll see what happens when they have all their guys healthy too.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
All right, let's switch it up. 1 month in, who's been the biggest disappointment? Trey, let's start with you again. Who you got?
Biggest disappointment so far for me is the Sacramento Kings, because just like the Pacers are always the Pacers, Kings are always the Kings. Yeah. Decent start, and then they flamed out immediately, and there's player drama just hanging over the team at all times. The offense is fine. De'Aaron Fox has been pretty good. He's only at 20 points and 5 assists per game. I would think the numbers would be a little bit higher. That being said, he's been good. Harrison Barnes having a solid season. Buddy Hield is finding his shot, but he's making big plays. Rashawn Holmes has been fun. Obviously, Tyrese Halliburton is a find. He could be competing for Rookie of the Year, but the defense, it's just abysmal. The worst in NBA history, and it doesn't really look like there's a way for them to get better on the defensive end, especially with this Marvin Bagley situation hanging over their heads. This could end really badly for the Kings, I think, because Fox and Bagley were drafted one right after another. This was going to be the nucleus for the Kings. Bagley hasn't lived up to expectations. That's led to the Kings not living up to expectations. If Bagley's gone, what really is keeping De'Aaron Fox interested? I know he's signed this huge deal, but this is going to be a guy that other teams are looking to poach, because if you look at the picks that they've had recently, Fox has turned out great. Buddy Hield coming back to the Kings, he was unhappy last year. Who knows what his situation is? They obviously botched the Bogdanović situation over the offseason, and now Bagley's unhappy. Yeah. That's your next three guys outside of De'Aaron Fox, and it's like, you have a hard enough time keeping players in the first place. When you actually have the good ones there, you should be trying to have some sort of progress, trying to make it an alluring place to stick around, to at least feel like you're competing. But for, I don't know, the 12th year in a row, it feels like the Kings are going to be scoring some points and giving them all back on the other end. They don't feel any closer to the playoffs than they did last season. Last season, they didn't feel any closer to the playoffs than they did the year before. But as soon as we stop looking at the Kings, they'll probably run off an 8-5 stretch and get you a little bit excited to the point where you get let down once again.
Yeah, that's the thing. You just can never get excited about the Kings. I told you guys the other day, it's like, next season when I start getting excited about the Kings, don't let me. Say, no, they're not. They're the Kings. They're not going to make the playoffs. They're going to fall apart. Some drama, some stupid drama is going to happen that won't help. So, yeah, no, it's a great pick, because I was excited about them. I obviously love Fox, and they still stick. I can't believe with those guys that you listed too, Lee, that's, or, Trey, that like those are like athletic, in a lot of cases, young guys that you think could get at it. Like, why are the Cavs number two in defense and the Kings are like some of the worst defense you've ever seen? Like, what? Yep. Come on. It's not the personnel. It's not like, it's not like you're playing that old ice hockey game and you've got all the skinny fast guys and I got all the big fat guys and you're just running laps around me or skating, circles around me. It's like, this doesn't make any sense. So, like, what's going on? So, very disappointing.
They do have a lot of skinny guys, though, when you're really thinking about the team. There's not a lot of beef inside, and it's like, it feels like a parade to the rim at all times when you're playing against the Kings. Yeah. And so, like, Rashawn Holmes, he's great. He's great at catching lobs. He's great on offensive rebounds, but he's still not a huge guy, right? He's still getting by on his athleticism and effort rather than just being huge. Maybe they just need a big, huge guy. Somebody call Hasheem Thabeet.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, you're right. Like, when it's a parade for the other team, when it's a parade to the rim, just layup after layup, it's like, well, who's that on then? I mean, it's on two things, right? It's like, hey, guards, stay in front of somebody. Try to, move your feet a little bit. And then, it also helps if you have somebody at the rim who can at least put a little fear into the offensive player and make things difficult. Like, they could use, like, before, obviously, the hand injury here, like a Miles Turner even, who's, like, just blocking at a ridiculous pace right now. Like, somebody to at least threaten back there. But bad on both accounts. Okay, Kings are a good one. Lee, who do you got for a disappointment?
Well, very close to home here, the Atlanta Hawks. Things started off really well at 4-1. And I was thinking, like, oh, maybe all those offseason moves and Trae Young's taking a step up. And then all of a sudden, the wheels came off very quickly here for the Hawks. Part of it to do with a little bit of internal strife there between John Collins and Trae Young. But ultimately, the Hawks, their competitiveness that they showed in the first five games, it's just not there at the moment. I hope it comes back, because I think this could also be a sort of similar situation to the Kings, where it's like, this team could look very different by the end of this season if they don't sort of get back on track here soon. There could be a coaching change, and there could also be some personnel moves as well, I think, because this was the season we were hoping and expecting to see, some real potential and some real stability with that team. But instead, it just doesn't seem to quite be there. They're kind of middle-of-the-road offense, middle-of-the-road defense. They can't close out teams. They've had a few bad losses. They've had some good wins, but again, most of those came at the start. The best one, of course, over the Brooklyn Nets there around New Year's Day, I think it was. But other than that, they've really sort of stunk it up, and I just wonder what is going on there and what will happen. Will they either shake off this little stuff that's been going on in the locker room, or will someone have to move from it? Because they lost four in a row. They've lost six out of their last eight. And they've got to get back on track pretty quickly here. I think some of the young players, DeAndre Hunter, Cam Reddish, I think they've been good. But is Lloyd Pierce is Lloyd Pierce the long-term solution for this team? Or does Travis Schlenk decide to move on from him? And if he does he decide to do that mid-season or wait until the end of the season? Because The Hawks need to be in competing for a playoff spot this entire season, I think. Otherwise, it's a failure. It's a failure. And, you know, Trae Young, he's in his third season now. He can obviously sign that huge contract at the end of this season going into next season, his rookie extension. I think he probably does, but he's going to want to see some more moves because he doesn't want to be on a team that's losing a lot, even though he has to take some of the responsibility as well for the way they've been playing lately. So, few issues here in Atlanta. Hopefully they can sort them out. I think they've got the talent to do it. But as we know, winning solves everything and losing makes everything even worse in the NBA. And when a team's in a bit of a rut like this, it just can often happen quickly. And it, again, could be the coach, could be some players. Not really sure exactly what Travis Schlenk's going to do, but things haven't gone so well after a very, very impressive start.
Yeah, I think Trae Young is the only person in the world that wishes it was still 2020.
Yeah,
because he had an incredible 2020 this season, right? Like his first four games, he was averaging like 33 and 8 and was getting to the line like 15, 16 times a game. And then Steve Nash talked some shit about him and his production just fell off a cliff. In the new year here, Young has struggled in terms of scoring the ball, shooting from distance, and not getting to the free throw line as much. So, yeah, it's I mean, they're like the Kings, maybe the Hawks. You just got to ignore them.
Yeah.
Like you can't pay any attention to them, and maybe they do a bit better. But once you start like going, oh, yeah, the Hawks figured things out, well, then that's things when things go wrong. But,
hey, the Hawks are 6-7. They're number 10 in defense. I think the concerns
you'll be happy
are
with
over.
That?
If the season ends and the Hawks are a top 10 defense and they're at about 500, isn't that a huge improvement this season? We were expecting them to be a lot better, no doubt about it. But we were expecting the offense to really be a top 5 offense, and maybe the defense would be bottom 10. They haven't had Bogdanovich for most of the season. They haven't had Gallinari for most of the season. Mm-hmm. These are the big moves they made in the offseason that everybody was super excited about. We haven't really seen them. It's almost the same team that we saw from the Hawks last year, and they're clearly better. I mean, they have struggled, no doubt about it. They were great in 2020, but I don't know. I feel like the concern is a little overblown here. I think the Hawks are doing better than people should have expected. You know, you bring in a bunch of veterans, it looks great alongside a young core. It doesn't always work like that. Obviously, there have been injuries, but Trae Young, once he gets back on track, I think the Hawks are going to be fine.
I think, though, as well, the big question is John Collins a part of their future or not? Because they sort of seem to have hesitated a little bit on him. They could have signed him to the big deal, and they didn't. So now he enters restricted free agency next season. He's a young player. He and Trae Young, in theory, should work together. They should be growing together. But if he's not a part of their future, then you know when do they move on from him? Do they trade him now, or do they wait to the off season, or you know what do they do? Because I think he's a good player. His value is questionable, though. He wants to be a max guy, and I'm not sure that he is. He wants to go out and show that this season. He wants more of the ball. He wants more opportunities to show that he can do it at both ends. So I think that's causing a little bit of. The problem there between he and Trae as well. They're sort of both trying to show that it's their team. And John Collins is kind of like, well, if I'm not a part of this team, I want to show other teams what I can do. So they need to just figure that out a little bit, I think, to decide whether or not they move ahead with John Collins, or they decide maybe we cash in on him now while they can.
Couple other disappointing teams. I could have gone with the Heat, but I'm going to give them a pass. You know, we talked about their injuries and not having really their full roster and having them played so late into last season and all that. I'll give them a pass. The Raptors, we've talked enough about them. Look, I don't think they're happy with their record, but they're getting it going slowly here. I think they'll definitely bounce back into being, you know, what? One of the top 6 or 5 teams, I guess, in the Eastern Conference when it's all said and done. I think that's where they're headed. And they just got rid of Alex Len, so that's good news. sorry, Len. But I'm going to go with the Pelicans as my disappointing team. They're 5-8 after another loss last night. I got a question for you. I'll throw it at you first, Trae. Is this season playoffs or bust for the Pelicans? You know, heading into this season, did you think that was something that was true or no?
No, certainly not.
No.
They made the move for... Who did they trade in the offseason? I don't even remember.
Well,
Steven
Adams was their big...
They got Steven Adams, and they have a ton of picks ahead of them from the trades with the Lakers. And, you know, you got 24 games from Zion last year.
Yep.
Certainly him coming back was going to be... would raise the expectations for the Pelicans. Brandon Ingram was an all-star last season. You expect him to be a little bit better, and they both had solid performances. But the Pelicans came out and surrounded... those two guys with Steven Adams and Eric Bledsoe, no surprise, they're the worst shooting team in the league. It doesn't really make sense when it happened, but Zion's also still a young man. I know he's filled with bulk and made out of refrigerators, but he's still got to save some bumps. You know, in the future, he's going to be a small ball five. He's not going to be playing against or next to a guy who's a giant in Steven Adams. They'll figure out somebody who can shoot from the outside. So I would want to see progress from the Pelicans. I would want to see a fully healthy season from Zion, and you're getting at least the fully healthy season from Zion so far. I didn't think it was playoffs or bust, but certainly they want to be in the tournament.
Yeah, yeah, and that's why I have them as disappointing. They play at a ridiculously slow pace. Okay, you know, 25th in the league, that's fine. But they're below average on both sides of the ball, so nothing has been all that impressive. And you said it there, Trey. Outside of the Cavs and Knicks, the Pelicans just take and make fewer three-pointers than the rest of the league. And then conversely, they just allow the most three-pointers attempted and made against them. So they just are at this huge deficit because of math. I mean, as simple as the three ball. They don't take enough or make enough, and they give up way too many. The Bird writes, which is a great Pelicans blog, they noted over the last like 1-6 stretch here, 1-6 stretch over the last 7 games where they can't win, they're getting destroyed from the three-point line. Opponents are scoring an average of 24 more points from deep the last 7 games lately. So that is that's an issue. I think Ingram, after last night's game, addressed it. He's like, we got to take more threes. So, you know, Stan Van, and this was Zion having another great game last night. You know, another 30-point performance, and he has played well. He's been awesome. But I think that the construction of this team is worrisome a little bit. With they just don't have enough shooters. Lonzo Ball can't hit a three. Bledsoe's not, you know, guaranteed to hit 3-point shots. JJ Redick, for some reason, has gone ice cold from distance. And then, you know, Steven Adams is not like a stretch five by any means when you're pairing him with Zion. So they're disappointing in the sense that they're only 5-8. And that was after actually a little decent start. They've gone on this really, really cold spell here. But what do you think about the Pelicans?
Well, yeah, I think as well we're expecting Zion Williamson to just really start to dominate and take over games. And he's putting up some good numbers, in fact. But it's not really impacting the bottom line. They're still losing and they're still defensive.
Well, he's horribly defensively.
Well, that's what I mean. Their defense is just not good enough. But yeah, when they made the trade for Eric Bledsoe, obviously giving up Drew Holiday, that was more about the future for David Griffin. So, you know, he's probably trying to buy himself a little bit of time here. And again, just in the way that we are right now, like in the business of the NBA, you have to always win and make sure you're impressing these young players so that you can convince them to stay on. Because Zion, only in his second season, and he missed most of his first, but you know that if the Pelicans don't make the playoffs again this year, then people will start saying, oh, he's going to the Lakers. He's going, you know, he's going to join somebody else. So this is not playoffs or bust, but it's more about, again, being in contention at least late into the season. You know, the Pelicans don't want to be like, they'll be written off in a couple of weeks that they can't even make the playoffs. They've got to improve for sure, but they've got a few questions as well. Like JJ Redick, you know, I think obviously this is probably his last season with the Pelicans because his timeline doesn't fit theirs. And Lonzo Ball's the other one. Is he a part of their future? They could have signed him to a contract in the offseason. David Griffin chose not to. They did sign Brandon Ingram, who clearly was a standout last season. He's a part of their future. So they need to find who is going to be their point guard. Is it Bledsoe? I don't think so. Is it Lonzo? I don't think so as well. So you know.
So what do you do? Hand the keys over to, you know, to Nah, Nikhil Alexander Walker. They got their Kira Lewis, right? Was their draft pick?
He's the point guard. Yeah. So you think that David Griffin is probably starting to figure out some sort of plan going forward. What do we do? Do we try to trade for a better point guard who's a little bit timeline suits more of what these guys are? He's got those draft picks now. He's got those assets. Maybe that's what he does. But the Pelicans certainly defensively not too dissimilar to the Kings as far as teams score pretty easily on them, and they need to improve in that area.
For sure. All right. This next one's fun. 1 month in, what's a prediction you would love to have back? We obviously did our season preview shows at the start of the season, did 5 of them in total, made a lot of predictions. TK, what's one month in now that you're just like, give me a mulligan on that one?
Well, I think I botched every single one of my award picks.
Okay.
But mostly, I don't think Luka Doncic is going to win MVP. It's not necessarily how he's playing. He struggled in December out of the gate. It didn't look like he was totally in shape, but he's rounding into shape now. He's been awesome in January. 29 points a game, 12 rebounds, 11 assists. He's shooting 47% from the field, 35% from three. Those would be MVP numbers over the course of the season. I just don't think the Mavericks are going to win enough games to really knock guys like LeBron and Kevin Durant off the pedestal here. Those seem to be the leaders for MVP for me right now. Maybe you would have Embiid in the mix as well, depending on how deep you want to go. But Doncic has been good. He just hasn't necessarily been MVP elite level good right now, especially from a win standpoint. You know, clearly the Lakers and Nets are going to end up with better records than the Mavericks will. So give me a mulligan on Luka. He's been good. but not MVP good.
Fair enough. Lee, what do you got for a prediction you'd like back?
Well, coming into the season, I envisioned a scenario where Andrew Wiggins could lead the Golden State Warriors in scoring. I don't know how he does it with these. He's got a great sales team out there for Wiggins Island, because no matter how bad the year was before that, it's like someone just rings up that phone and rings you up, and they're very convincing in their sales pitch. You're like, sure, I'm in, I'll give you my money. Now, Wiggins hasn't been terrible. He's been kind of Wiggins, you know, a couple of good games, a couple of ordinary games, a couple of games where he has four blocks, and you're like, oh my God, he's playing defense as well, hit some big threes. And then he just kind of just goes missing for a couple of games. But right now, Steph Curry, he's leading the team in scoring by, has a double-digit lead over Andrew
Wiggins. What a shock. I mean, that was one of the weirder predictions we've ever made, well, I've got to be honest. It would have been a fine prediction if you're like, Wiggins will contribute. He'll be a great player for the Warriors. But no, you had to like go to the point of like, he will outscore maybe one of the greatest scorers we've ever seen in NBA history in Steph Curry.
Look,
that would never made any sense.
My reasoning behind it was that Steph Curry was going to get more attention because we knew Klay Thompson was out. Wiggins is athletic. He's fast. All he has to do is finish around the rim. And that first game, remember that game against the Bucks? Or was it the Bucks? I can't remember his first. I think it was. No, it was the Nets. And he went like 0 for 5 in the first quarter, missed layups, turned the ball over. And I was just like, oh my God. Like, you couldn't even lead them in scoring in the first quarter of the first game.
right. But he's played well. I mean, Wiggins is actually, if you take a step back and take your prediction down from he'll lead the team in scoring to he'll contribute, I think he's actually playing decently well for this team.
He's picked it up a little bit. He certainly, those first few games were rough as anything. But he can. It's like, what is the expectations of him? And I think now we've taken him down from being like a franchise changer to just like, can you contribute on a team at both ends? And
the expectations is, can you be Harrison Barnes for us from the Warriors?
Basically,
like, can you do that? I think he can,
And he does at times. There's still times where he seems like he's sleepwalking through the game. But look, you know, sometimes, you know, you just have to, you make a prediction, you talk yourself into it. You think, I'm going to sell this to the guys. I wonder if I'll get anyone on board. No, it's dismissed from the start, and rightfully so. But listen, you just got to dust yourself off and get back up there and make another crazy prediction. One of them will come off.
For sure. Yeah, that's right. You got to throw those darts, man. You never know. You'll hit one of them. Well, a prediction I'd love to have back was my infatuation with the Blazers heading into the season. Like, you talk about MVP picks, Trey. I went with Lillard. Now, again, his numbers are there. They're impressive, but you got to have some victories with your squad to really get in that MVP conversation. And, you know, I took Lillard because I thought a big part of that hinged on the Blazers maybe cracking the top three in the West. And a big part of that hinged on an improved defense, and it just hasn't happened. In fact, it's almost identical to last year's defense. It's brutal. The Blazers can't stop anyone. 114-ish defensive rating, bottom three or four in the league again. There's just very little resistance. You know, they're easy to pass against. You'll get open looks. They don't have a ton of interior defense if you want to get in there and slice them up inside. So it's bad. And I thought, you know, I'd talked myself into, you know, Covington as a 3-and-D guy making a big difference on the wing. And I liked the Derrick Jones Jr. signing 2 years, $19 million. I thought he gave him, of course, some athleticism on the wing. They re-signed Rodney Hood, who was injured. They replaced Whiteside with Cantor. And it's like, okay, that's a bit of a wash. That's probably even better. I'd rather have Cantor, at least offensively. But, you know, it hasn't gone according to my plan. They're fine. Like, the Blazers are going to be a playoff team. I think we all agree with that. But I thought they maybe would push into, like, sort of that upper echelon top three. And you still have them in where do you have them? A tier two, maybe even borderline tier three, like, championship contender. They're good, but they're not great. And, of course, all these injuries now don't help with Nurkic. I guess they're saying now he's out 6 weeks. We got McCollum out for at least 4 weeks. Like, it sucks. So I'm sorry I got too excited about the Blazers. And I went all in. I pushed all my chips in on a Lillard MVP because the Blazers were going to be like one of these elite teams. And they're just not, because you got to stop teams at some point from scoring to win some of these games.
Well, with Nurkic and McCollum out, maybe Dame can make a little run at the MVP here. You know, he's really going to have to put the team on his back if the Blazers are going to stay afloat and even stay in the Western Conference playoff picture. But Skeets, I felt bad for you with this Blazers pick, because you were talking up their defense and these new guys they brought in. Feels like they keep shuffling in these versatile wings at the 3 and 4 spots, but the 1, 2, and 5 stay the same. Yep. Something's not adding up here. But when the news broke that the Blazers had brought in Jim Boylan to coach the defense. I knew it wasn't going to work.
Yeah, that was a bad sign when that happened. You know, I thought Lee was going to say maybe Gary Trent Jr. would lead the Blazers in scoring this year with all the attention focused on Lillard.
He might now, maybe.
No, he might not. Who knows? All right, so I got Blazers. We got Wiggins, we got Luka in the mix there as prediction mulligans. Final one here, 1 month in. This is a fun one. What's been your play of the season so far? What do you got, Trey?
Well, Andrew Wiggins' sidekick, Steph Curry, went for a career-high 62, and his shot, his last three-pointer, was number 8 on the night. I just thought that was such a joyous moment because you could see Draymond instantly transporting back to 2015. He's saying, I'm getting this assist. He charges up the left wing. You know it's going to Steph Curry. Everybody knows it's going to Steph Curry. This happened against the Blazers, so of course he got a good shot. Still got fouled. Didn't call it. He's getting knocked down. He gets up. He's running back down the court, doing the Jason Terry arms out. Watching Steph cook is still one of the most joyful experiences in the NBA. You know, the Warriors' motto this year is joy in buckets. And I just love it because they're basically saying, we're not sure we're going to be great this year, but we still got Steph Curry, and it's going to be awesome when he's on fire. He's been having these types of performances for the last half decade. But after the injury last year, after the Warriors struggled out of the gate, Steph 62 that night, that felt like the first time it had happened again. It was awesome.
Yep, 62, of course. Correct me if I'm wrong. That's still the season high for anybody in the league this year. 62.
Yeah, Beal had 60. I think that's the only 60 two even, 60s.
Yep.
Yeah.
Beal had 60?
Beal, yeah.
Wow.
Against the Sixers.
Yeah. Jeez, I don't even remember.
57 and three quarters, well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, wow. The Wizards haven't played for about 3 months. So
yeah, maybe that's why. I forgot the Wizards were a team.
Yeah.
I forgot they were still around. Okay, that's a good one. Curry 62. That was special. What do you got, Lee, as a play of the season?
Mine came in last night, finally, because we've been waiting for Facundo Campazzo to really light us up at the NBA highlights. And look at this one here last night, the fast break. Behind himself, between the legs, to Monte Morris for a gorgeous layup. This is just, look at him. Just, whoa, like that, beautiful. And then gorgeous finish there. What a clever f***er he really is.
Okay, you saved it, because this is the moment of the season.
I know, this is insane. I can't come on. When somebody picks a play pass? That I could do.
Come on, when was the last time you've ever seen that? When have we ever seen that in a fast break from a guy?
Okay, I can't think of what
I used to play with a guy named Sebastian Oros who did that pass on a fast break all the time.
Who?
All the time. Sebastian Oros, not your son. He lived in Aurora, Illinois. A solid pickup player, but come on, mate.
Come on, that was gorgeous. Because again, when he came, we were expecting to see some incredible stuff from him. He had that little like reverse spin pass. I think that was in a preseason game. Yeah. He hasn't had a lot of minutes. But when he's out there, man, he's exciting to watch. Same with Bol Bol. I just want to see a little bit more Bol Bol. He had a nice dunk last night, but it was in the blowout. Yeah, it was in the blowout. But Nuggets are fun to watch, even though, God, man, Jamal Murray is struggling right now.
Okay, your play of the season was Campazzo dropping it between his legs. Last night. What was in the lead before that? Now I'm fascinated.
Well, the
a
night
nice
before
bounce
when,
pass from
no,
Jokic
night,
or something?
The night before when Steph Curry had that crossover of Anthony Davis where he
yeah,
undressed
short
him.
Short memory, eh?
Yeah. Live in the moment, man. Live in the moment.
I say wear the moment. shout out to Breaking Tea. Okay, my play of the season. I was going to go, actually, believe it or not, with like a Miles Bridges dunk, and I couldn't pick which one because he has like three or four, I guess the Hornets as a team, have like three or four huge dunks this year against the Raptors, like all of them, even though they all came in losses. You talk about recently, Bridges, did you see that one, Lee, where he threw down that nasty, like two-handed, like cockback dunk on Boucher?
Yeah.
That was nuts. Like, you don't see he put it like behind his back, like tapped his back shoulder blades like he's Latrell Sprewell and then dunked it on. So that was huge.
That was off the LaMelo Ball pass, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I had that one up, man. I clipped that one up. That was great.
Oh, geez. Sorry, Worldwide Wob. I didn't realize you were all over that one. I wasn't following you that night that closely on Twitter. But I just want to show love to Bridges, who has some huge dunks this year. But I think I'm going to go with not a dunk as my play of the season so far. I think it has to be LeBron's no-look three-pointer. versus the Rockets, where he's taking a mid-game bet with Dennis Schroeder. And, of course, shoots it and turns around. You got to look a man in the eyes to make the bet. And then it drops. And then that basically broke the Rockets, right? That was the game where Harden afterwards is like, get me the hell out of here. Like, I'm done. This is crazy. And, yeah, it just sort of perfectly encapsulates the Lakers season, too, because we've talked a lot. I know you have as well, Trey, like about just the Lakers coasting. I mean, like you're joking, I saw with LeBron basically is wearing a robe for the first three quarters and then sometimes takes it off and takes over late down the stretch. So LeBron with the Steph Curry, like no look three in the corner. And we said maybe it's the best one ever too, like in terms of straight up turning around and not running back like Curry's done before where he's looking at fans and stuff like that. So I'll go LeBron's no look three, but that's a fun question for everybody in the stream team, for everyone listening to the podcast later. You can tweet at us. Play of this season so far. What do you have for that one? As I was going through a bunch of the highlights from this year, I was like, there's been some big dunks. Don't get me wrong, some big plays. You know, Zion's dunk for crying out loud was pretty damn huge, but I couldn't zero in on one. So I think that LeBron for me stands out.
That's definitely LeBron. I mean, Lee picked a terrible play for his favorite play. I picked a good one. But when you see a LeBron highlight that's actually going to go on LeBron's career highlight reel, at this point, it's pretty special. It's like, remember how hyped we were when he did that pass where he looked away and threw it to Ante Zizic underneath the hoop, a one-hander? When you see plays like this that you haven't seen from LeBron, it's different, right? Because we've seen this guy make every single play on a basketball court, but when in year 25 he pulls out something new, you're like, come on, this guy can do it all. He can.
Yeah.
Hey, next time, whenever we do play pickup ball, Trey, I'm going to do the Facundo pass to you, and I want you to do it to me as well, just to see how difficult it is at high speed, okay?
Okay, I love it. We'll just, every time down the court, we'll go between our legs, behind our back. It'll be like what's that game where you jump over each other? What's that called?
Leapfrog.
Leapfrog. That's a leapfrog pass right there.
That was a nice pass.
Let's try it.
It was a nice pass. I don't think it was the play of the season.
Come on, man. It was beautiful.
Okay, well, let's hear from you guys. Like I said, let us know in the stream team. Again, tweet at us at NoDunksInc for all of these questions 1 month in. That was a lot of fun. All right, let's quickly, though, get to some of the games from last night. There's only two on. Jokic scores 27 and three quarters as the Nuggets kill the Thunder. 119-101. Trey, you got a takeaway from this one?
Yeah, watch out when Nikola Jokic gets a haircut. He looked great last night. 27, 12, and 6. He was 12 of 21 from the field. I saw him do a chin-up on the rim after a dunk. Obviously, he was feeling good. No Al Horford for the Thunder, so honestly, really no chance against Jokic inside. It was Isaiah Roby, a man who I have no choice but to stand. He comes from a tiny school in Illinois, but he's not ready to guard an MVP candidate in Nikola Jokic, who was just putting him in the basket. Then they go to their bench, and it's Mike Muscala. Not any better. Jokic is a load to handle down low. We talk about beef inside. That man is beefed up, and he knows how to use it. He was just throwing his body around, getting easy buckets. Easy win for the Nuggets.
Roby, man, that guy looks. He's 22, I think. He looks 12.
He's young.
He's got such a youthful face. It's crazy. Do you like, Lee, the buzz cut Jokic, or do you like him with a little hair? What's your take on that? Because Trey's right. He showed up with a fresh cut there last night.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't he's never really sort of changed his hairstyle around too much, has he? Like,
he had it grown out a little bit.
Yeah. I would I'm rocking the mullet these days, so I would love him to I would love him to bring that out. I think he could rock it nicely, but it just takes, 10 months to grow it, I think. This game though was a bit of a tough one because the Nuggets got out pretty early in this one and the Thunder again without Al Horford out there really had a big hole in the middle. But Jamal Murray had the first basket of the game, a dunk. Mm-hmm. How many baskets did he score after that?
Without looking, I mean probably two or something.
One.
Oh wow. Yeah.
I'm not sure what's going on with him at the moment. I'm not sure.
You're starting to hear the buzz of trade Jamal Murray for Bradley Beal.
Oh, no, don't do that. But the other night, let's not panic on Jamal Murray just yet. He's fine. I think him and Jokic.
Okay, I love Jamal Murray, but you're telling me if you're the Nuggets, like let's say a hypothetical, we'll trade you Jamal Murray for Bradley Beal straight up. You wouldn't do that?
Just hold on. I'd hold on for now.
Wow.
I'd let Jamal Murray ride out this rough streak that he's going on right now. Because the other night, in the first half, he had like 24 points. I was like, hey, he's back. And I think he scored 3 points in the second half.
Like
he
six,
just can't.
Think, yeah.
He like I say, we were down in bubble. He was putting up 50s without even looking. Mm-hmm. And now he just can't get into that rhythm for some reason. I'm not sure why. But, first play of the game, dunk. You're like, okay, that's what he needs, that little loosener. And that was it. after that, sort of struggled. So just can't, he's just not, there's no juice to his game at the moment. It'll come back though.
Okay, all right. He still believes. He's not trading Jamal Murray for Bradley Beal. I'm actually shocked by that, Lele. Especially you as a Beal fan, too.
Yeah, look, I would like to see him. You know, the Nuggets would be a good team. I'm just not ready to give up if I'm the Nuggets on Jamal Murray just yet. He's shown what he can do in the playoffs. And that, to me, is huge.
Fair. Fair. Absolutely fair. Yeah, not much else from this one. And Trey, what do you think about the Jokic buzz cut? You're more of a fan when he looks like that, when he's streamlined, like he's going to go swimming?
I just like the way he generally carries himself with regards to haircuts. Okay. He's like, I'm getting a haircut a month. Deal with it.
Right.
You know, like, I'm getting my haircut, I guess, January 19th. Next time will be February 19th. In between, you'll get some flops. It's fine.
Yeah. Okay. The other game from last night, pretty similar score, actually. Donovan Mitchell scored 28 as the Jazz beat the Pelicans. We talked about them a little bit as a disappointing team. 118-102. Now, I just want to point this out. ESPN, the disrespect to the Utah Jazz, who've won six straight, one of the hottest teams in the league, you know, one of the best records in the league. This is what they have on the NBA front page on ESPN this morning. You see the score there. Okay, Jazz 118-102. And then you got the highlights, just straight up photo of Zion. And okay, second straight 30-point game. Good for Zion. Come on, where's the Jazz love? The disrespect is real. But the Jazz are, in all honesty, playing really well right now. That was the type of win you really want to see from the Utah Jazz last night. Donovan Mitchell is your leading scorer with 28. Okay, great. He had a better pass than Campazzo there last night.
Oh,
Lele,
by far!
With the stupid wrap around.
He did it twice.
You're right. But that one where he got into the paint and then wrap around that pass out to Bojan for three. The only thing I didn't like about the play is Bojan dribbled.
Yeah.
It's the only thing. It just like ruins the play a little bit, but he knocked it down, so it doesn't matter. What a pass. Yeah. Oh, my God. Jordan Clarkson continued his hot shooting start. 18 points off the bench, 6 boards, 6 assists. That's great. Ingles, 15 points, all of them 3-pointers. That's huge. Gobert did his thing. Man in the middle, 13, 18 boards, 3 blocks. The Jazz right now have 6 rotation guys shooting over 38% from 3. 6 guys. Royce O'Neal is 45% on 4 3-point attempts. Clarkson's 43% on way more attempts. Ingles 41.2 on about 5 attempts. Conley 41.1% on nearly 7 attempts. Bogdanovich about 39% on 6.6 attempts. And Mitchell, the worst of the bunch here, 38.5% from distance on 8.7 attempts. The Utah Jazz, if they are hitting threes like this, are a damn good basketball team. A damn tough out. And you got 5 or 6 guys, you know, like lighting it up from downtown right now. And they're just going under the radar. They're a damn good team, you know. Okay, let's see it in the playoffs. I get all that. But they're going to be one of the top 4 teams in the Western Conference in terms of wins in the regular season. I think you book that.
Jordan Clarkson seems an irrational confidence guy, but right now, this season, it's working for him. He just gets out there. Yeah, he gets out there, and he's, you know, if the ball's going to him, it's going up. It's going up. Although he did have the 6 assists last night,
yeah,
which was a surprise. But otherwise, he's just like, I'm shooting this and I'm getting my shot off. And in the past, it's like, oh my God, you'll live with that all day. But right now, he's really putting up the good numbers. So good on him, because he got the big contract in the offseason, which I was a bit skeptical about. I think it was 4 years and $50 million around there. And and I was like, they've overpaid for a bench guy. But right now, he's giving them exactly what they need. Just when he comes out there, that scoreboard keeps ticking over. And that's so important. That's really all you want from that guy coming off the bench. And he's giving it to them.
I just love with the Jazz, you know, if Gobert is playing, that the defense is going to be elite. You just know it. It's going to be a top 10, if not top 5. Just pair it with some offense, some shooting especially, and man, that's a good damn team. And that's what's going on right now. They're 10-4. They're like right behind the Lakers. They're tied with the Clippers. Again, one of the best records in the NBA, and you know, no one really cares. I get it. They're in Utah. Okay, no one gives a damn. But man, they're good. They're fun to watch right now too. The way they're all shooting. You just wonder if they can keep it up, Trey.
Yeah, 21 threes last night. That's the 5th time this season already that the Jazz have hit 20 or more threes. They did it 4 times last year. Somehow the Jazz are the best 3-point shooting team in the league right now. That's not what you expect from the Jazz unless it's Stockton and Hornacek out there. But if they're able to keep up the shooting, it certainly helps, because it makes it a lot easier for guys like Jordan Clarkson and Donovan Mitchell to do some damage inside. It gives Rudy Gobert a lot more room to run. Having Bogdanovich back for them is huge. We knew he was going to be a major piece that they missed during the bubble playoffs. Obviously, that was the case, but he helps stretch the court. He can play a little bit of defense, and the shots are falling right now. The Jazz always go on a huge winning streak. Maybe this is the one for them. Enjoy it, Jazz fans. You played great on a night when there were only two games. Mm. That's how you get a spot on No Dunks.
Yeah. Now, unfortunately, did we start the show with you? No, we did 1 month in. But still, you got a nice 5 minutes right there.
There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's absolutely true about them. The way they're playing is fun. They're a fun watch right now. And, you know, they're an interesting team, too, when I think about it. They're one of the teams that probably did the least in the offseason. So, you know, you wonder if, like, just that... that consistency, that continuity of the same team. Basically, I mean, what'd they do? They brought back Favors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. Am I forgetting anything? That's really what they did. That was their whole offseason in a nutshell. And maybe that's helping them get off to this hot start too, ahead of some of these other teams. All right, final news here. Not a game, because we already did the two games. But Kyrie Irving, he practiced with the Nets on Tuesday, Lele. Coach Steve Nash says that he expects the All-Star point guard will play tonight against your Cleveland Cavaliers. Kyrie has missed the past seven games. Five for personal reasons, two while conditioning. Now, Irving said that he had, quote, he had a lot of family and personal stuff going on, so he just wants to leave it at that. Now, he talked to the media for a long time yesterday. He had lots of things to say, but sounds like he's going to play tonight. And I think the most important thing I took from it was that he said he addressed his teammates and his organization individually. That was the big question mark we had. Like, okay, you got to do what you got to do, man. You got to take care of yourself, your mental health, whatever else you have going on in your life and your family. But there needs to be communication, I think, with your employer in this case. He says that he has, and they're ready to move on. Anything else to add?
Well, just that we should if a guy has some issues that he needs to deal with mentally and emotionally, we should never hold that against him or in any way, criticize him for that, because I think that's a very, very important thing to deal with. Make sure you are taking care of yourself, first of all. And if that means he takes some time away from the game, I think that's fine. You know, let's not pile on this guy. Let's let him have his space there, because mental and emotional health is a very, very important subject, and it carries a stigma still that people think, you know, that you're being a loser or that you're, you know, that you're doing
quitter
something wrong
or something. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And everyone, every single one of us know that all of us are dealing with something, whatever it is in our life. And when you're in the spotlight, like an athlete is, like Kyrie Irving, people want to keep probing and picking and saying, what is it? Tell us. And sometimes you don't want to do that. You just want to deal with those things that you need to take care of. And Kyrie has done some incredible things off the court that I'll just quickly run through a couple of them here. You know, he donated $1.5 million to WNBA players who couldn't get paid during the COVID pandemic mm-hmm. last season. He's donated over $300,000 to feeding New York City families. He partnered with Nike to donate 17 pallets of food and 50,000 masks to the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. And he's done several other things. And recently he bought a home for the family of George Floyd, who was, of course, murdered by a Minneapolis police officer last year. So Kyrie Irving has some other things that he likes to give attention to, and I think they're all in very important causes, much more important than what goes on in a basketball game. Having said all that, though, it is still on Kyrie to communicate to his team a little bit more consistently, so at least they understand where he is and what's going on, because he did seem to go missing there for a few days. So I think, he can improve in that area. But otherwise, certainly dealing with your mental health and your issues, your personal issues, are very important, and they should be encouraged and certainly not ridiculed for doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very excited to see if he plays tonight too. What these Nets look like, the damn All-Star team and KD, Harden and Kyrie, and how that fits. That's the real thing we want to talk about, like how that works on the court, Trey. And, whether the whole, there's only one ball to go around with these three guys with the usage rates through the roof, you know, that's what I want to talk about. So it sounds like we're going to be getting to that again, hopefully starting tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. I can't wait to see Kyrie on the court with these guys, because that's all you hear. Is there going to be enough ball? How is he going to fit next to James Harden? James Harden has played with high usage guys his entire career and put up top 10 offenses. Now he's on the best offensive team he's ever been on. Kyrie Irving, we'll just see how he slots in along. Maybe the Nets, you know, maybe they average 120 points a game with these three out there. They could still all average 30. There's still 30 points to go around. I can't wait to see how it plays out. I love Kyrie. I love the work he does off the court, and he's certainly a different guy. And when you're a different guy and you handle the media differently, when things like this happen, when you disappear from your team for 2 weeks, it's not going to be good. You know, people are going to jump down your throat. But hearing from Kyrie, I think, puts a lot of concerns at ease. And now it'll just be a case of actually seeing them on the court together. Cannot wait. Pretty crazy, though, if Kyrie makes his return in Cleveland. He hasn't been playing in Cleveland since he left Cleveland. He was there for the very first game. Celtics versus Cavs, whatever year that was. That must have been 2017, I suppose, so. Right? When Gordon Hayward had the injury. But it's been a long time, obviously. not quite the same. Maybe it's a little easier to return when there are fewer fans in the stands, but it'll be interesting to see him back on the court. Cannot wait.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
Lee, I swear to God, if you make Campazzo's pass Tweet of the Night, I'm going to go crazy here. What do you got?
Well, you said for me, you know, you don't want me to live in the moment, so I'm actually going with a Way Back Wednesday tweet. Now, let me just okay. Build up to this, because today is a happy day in America. It's a day for hope again, because the big dumb idiot is gone. And it can't be overstated just how bad he was for this country and the world. And in the NBA world, it also means a resumption of a tradition that hasn't happened since Barack Obama was in office. Because usually the winning championship team makes a visit to the White House to see the president. And it's always a fun event. We always got some good laughs out of that, some great content out of that,
right,
whenever they went to see them. And so, but this president, the last president, the most recent one, was such a terrible human being that teams stopped going. Players didn't want to go there and didn't want to be at the White House. And that started after the 2017 Warriors won the championship. Now, they were invited to the White House because Trump was desperate to get acceptance in the NBA world. That was the one sport that he really wanted to be included in. You know, NFL, sure, it's a bigger sport in this country, no doubt about it. But the NBA is the cool sport. And that's the one that he desperately wanted. You know, hockey teams went to the White House, NFL teams, college went, but no NBA teams went while Trump was in office. Mm-hmm. And when the Warriors were sort of prepared, you know, talking about maybe going and not going, Steph Curry said that we don't stand for basically what our president has, the things that he has said and the things that he has done or said in the right times, and we won't stand for it. And so just after that, not too long ago after that, Trump, you know, acting as always as if he was in control, said, right, invitation is withdrawn and you're no longer welcome to come to the White House. But that was after the Warriors had said,
yeah,
we're not going. Okay, the old I broke up with you before you broke up with me first. And that prompted this great tweet from LeBron James way back in 2017 that just said, you bum. Stephen Curry already said he ain't going, so therefore ain't no invite. Going to the White House was a great honor until you showed up. And I thought that was just really good stuff from LeBron James, because people are always saying, oh, keep the sport out of politics, even though the president used to use sport to his advantage whenever he wanted to. He wanted Bill Belichick in there the other day to give him a Freedom of Honor medal, and he wouldn't do that. Belichick was like, no thanks, I'm not going near you. So anyway, I just think today is such a significant day for America and for the rest of the world, because a little bit of hope returns to the world, because the last 4 years have been absolutely disastrous for so many people around the world and so many institutions. And finally today, that cloud of darkness gets lifted and hope returns. And it's great. And we will see, I'm sure, back in the White House. The Lakers and LeBron will be probably back in the White House. Well, I'm not sure actually with social distancing if that's going to happen immediately. But you know that teams will start returning to the White House and having fun again, because that was always a great time.
Great tweet of the night. An unheralded, under the radar tweet. 1.3 million likes. Just kidding. It's a great tweet.
Wouldn't the Cavs have been the last team to go to the White House? 2016, remember? They had the there was that classic clip where they removed the podium.
Shumpert.
And Iman Shumpert is watching. She's like, whoa! Can't wait to see what tech they've come up with in the next 5 years.
Yeah, holograms or something like that. All right. Way back Wednesday, you called it there, Tweet of the Night. The guy lives in the moment, but he's giving us tweets from 4 years ago. Incredible, man. You're incredible. All right, pick 'em results from last night. It was the Pelicans-Jazz game. Jazz were favored by 6.5. Lee and I, this tag team, you and I, Lee, with these picks, we're rolling now. We took the Jazz to cover. They did, as we talked about. So, victory for Lee, victory for me. I'm 10-8. All right, feeling pretty good in January. Lee improves to 8-10. And the loss for Tass and Trey bumped them down to 8-10. Three-way tie, guys, for last place. Oh, this is exciting. Now, still lots of basketball in January to be played. Tonight's game, though, Miami at Toronto? No, Tampa. But Heat-Raptors, it's a Florida contest. The Tampa Bay Raptors favored by 4.5. All right, so the Heat still without some of their main guys, I believe. Someone can fact check me on that, but anyway, Heat Raps, you know, two teams, like I said, I slipped them in there. Both have had disappointing starts to their year, no doubt, in terms of their victories, their win-loss records. But they're both, I think everybody thinks, still good teams. So who do you have tonight? Let's start with you, Trey. Who do you have tonight?
I don't know, Skeets. Are the Raptors going to do good tonight?
Yes, they are. I would take the Raptors, so are you?
Okay, I'll take the Raptors. Sounds good to me. They've been playing pretty well lately. They're on a bit of a winning streak. It feels like they're figuring things out now that they've moved Chris Boucher into the starting lineup, playing a little bit faster. He's been solid. So, give me the Raps.
Yep, I'm also taking the Raps. Not overthinking this one. I think they win this by 5 or more, Lee. Again, Alex Len is gone, and that's always good for a couple more points in my book. So, I got the Raps. Trey's got the Raps. What do you got?
Yeah, just looking at the Heat, I know Bam was back in their last game, but no Jimmy still. I'm not sure about Dragic. Even Tyler Hero, I think, missed their last game.
He's got that neck injury.
Yeah, so a little too many injuries there for the Heat. I think the Raptors have got 5 points in them, so let's make it a three-way.
Okay, three of us have Raps. Let's see who Tass has. I'm guessing he goes Toronto as well, but let's find out.
I'm just a hometown boy, born and raised in South Toronto, and I won't stop believing.
Wow. Oh, wow.
So I guess he's picking the Raptors.
I think that's a pick for the Raptors. Oh, that was awesome. I love how that ended. Okay, so everybody taking Toronto. So that means the Heat are going to win for sure now. All four of us are taking Toronto to win by 4.5, so 5 points or more. Oh my goodness, go Raps. Okay, that's it for today's show. That was a fun one, guys. Thanks for joining us. Keep emailing your NBA questions and comments in for our Beach Steppin' podcast. New one coming today, 3 p.m. Eastern, live on YouTube if you want to join us live. Make sure you subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube so you know when we're going live. Like and comment, do all that. Grab your No Dunks merch at nodunks.com and subscribe to The Athletic for $3.99 a month right now. Go to theathletic.com/nodunks. Good show, guys. Can't wait for Friday. I know we got Thursday's podcast. I know we got Beach Steppin'. I know we got Shane Heal. But on Friday, we will, at the 1 month in mark, you know, make our picks right now for some of the NBA award front runners. And those are always fun podcasts. That's Friday's show, though. Clipper Bros!
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, Shane Heal is the hammer because he got in a lot of fights as a kid.
Brace the day, people. You could stay, ooh, every day. And I'd be happy every minute. It's been so long, but you're the one I've waited for. It's happened already. It's gonna be groovy.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.